Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, November 10th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology. And by Slingbox, which just turned your iPad into a television. Slingbox introduces their new iPad app, so now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Check it out at Best Buy or slingbox.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today, very happy to have back on the show from All Things D, Ina Fried. How's it going, Ina?
Howdy. It's good.
And your cats are here as well, and I hear they're very excited for the show.
They are extremely excited.
Look on Twitter.
Follow I always Ina get the Twitter. Sense they're telling Ina everything she needs to know.
I kind of think so.
They are. They're my interns.
Okay. I didn't want to, you know, out your sources there. But,
I'm really talking about my cat.
Creatures close to the matter.
Familiar with the matter. Yeah. Felines familiar with the matter.
Yes.
There you go.
Let's start with something that just broke. Wall Street Journal reporting that a proposed settlement between Facebook and the FTC is near approval that would require Facebook to obtain, quote, express affirmative consent of any user who faces material retroactive changes. So in other words, if they change the privacy options, they have to get you to opt in to those privacy options. They can't just suddenly change anything they do. And in fact, even current privacy settings would have to change if they materially change. At least that's the way the Wall Street Journal article reads. The agreement would also require Facebook to submit to independent privacy audits for 20 years.
They're like the big boy now, right?
Yeah.
Microsoft gets audited for 20 years. Google, now
Twitter.
Facebook. Oh, and Twitter?
Yeah.
Look, somebody should send them a cake.
Facebook's all grown up now. Your existing privacy settings will be left as they are. Settlement stems from an investigation that dates back to December 2009. You may or may not remember that. Facebook changed its privacy settings at the time for some people automatically, and the FTC took up an investigation. This could be the settlement of the investigation. I think this should just be their policy anyway. It's sad that the FTC would have to come in and enforce this.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Tom. I mean, it's you know, this common sense. I mean, it is unfortunate that that it took the FTC to get them to do what I think, you know, everyone should reasonably expect when it comes to privacy, which is, you know, that when you share something, you'll know who you're sharing it with, and they can't go back and change that without getting you to say yes, I'm okay with that.
See, I'm expecting there to be, like, when Facebook changed a bit, they would, like, gray out the background, put this pop-up window or a little, I guess, inline thing, and it would say, oh, changes are happening. Read these and click through so you can get to the actual Facebook. I'm just wondering if this is just going to put up a big notice, stuff has changed, and people are just going to click through it without reading it. I mean, just because they have notice and then somebody hits accept, it would be like a EULA.
But that's the thing, is that you can say, well, who reads those EULAs? Well, that's what you're saying that you did when you say, yes, continue, mm-hmm. I want to update. There have been changes made to iTunes type of thing. I mean, it's, if you're not going to read it, then if you've said, yes, I've read this, then it's your fault if you didn't.
But I think you're right, Ayaz. I think that's what Facebook will do to get express affirmative consent. When they change privacy options from now on, they'll pop something up and say, your privacy options have changed. Please review them and press OK if you want to accept these changes. It's the only way they can do sort of the viral changes that they have wanted to do, things like Facebook timeline and all of that, because otherwise people would just never change their privacy settings and new technologies, new features like timeline would not take off. However, if you notice, things like timeline and others have been opt-in the past several times they've introduced them. So I think Facebook's already following this policy ahead of time.
Well, I mean, timelines was a different situation because you had to actually go through it like a dev channel mm-hmm. in order to...
But when it's rolled out mm-hmm. to the public, they have said, you'll have to go turn it on.
Right.
You know, it's not just going to happen, right? Am I right about that?
No, you're right. Okay. And that's the same thing with subscriptions, too. I mean, you had to go seek out the subscriptions option and say, yes, I want people to be able to subscribe to my stuff. And so that way, when I post something publicly, but I haven't added Tom as a friend, he's going to see what I've posted. So it's very much more of a proactive kind of a measure rather than, I didn't know Facebook was doing this. That's really their only option unless they want people to keep being angry.
The U.S. Senate has blocked a bill that would have overturned the FCC's net neutrality guidelines. This was a House bill that was going over to the Senate as Senate Resolution 6, disapproval of federal communications rule regulating the Internet and broadband industry practices. It was right down party lines, disapproved 42 to 56. So the FCC guidelines on net neutrality will go into effect on November 20th. The rules are very similar to the ones put in place in 2005 under the President Bush administration. Those rules, however, had to be thrown out when Comcast won a court case over the FCC, ordering them to stop interfering with the BitTorrent protocol. So the FCC had to go back, redraft their guidelines, base them on different regulatory principles, and they are going to be taken to court again. And Verizon already has a lawsuit pending over the new rules that will be heard soon. Now, when I posted this on Twitter earlier today that the vote had happened, I got several different reactions. One, yay. Another one, boo. And another one, what is this good or bad? I can't tell you if it's good or bad, but we can tell you what the guidelines are. So let's do that, and then we'll go around the table and say what you think. These are the guidelines the FCC is going to put in place. Now you tell me if you think this is too much government intervention, if you think it's necessary government intervention, or you think it's practically useless. There are three guidelines. Transparency. So fixed and mobile broadband providers will have to disclose the network management practices, performance characteristics, and commercial terms of their broadband services. They're required to tell you how much speed you're getting, what you're paying for it, what their management practices are. If they do throttle BitTorrent, they have to tell you that they do that. Number two, no blocking. Now, this is where wireless and wireline are different. Fixed broadband providers, wireline, the ones you plug into the wall, may not block lawful content, applications, services, or non-harmful devices. However, wireless only are prevented from blocking applications that compete with voice or video telephony services and lawful websites. They can't block lawful websites or apps that compete with their voice or video services. And finally, the third guideline, no unreasonable discrimination. Fixed broadband providers may not unreasonably discriminate in transmitting lawful network traffic. However, there is no provision that wireless providers can't unreasonably discriminate.
Okay, so on point one, I think I'm totally for it. They need to be as transparent as possible. We need to know what traffic looks like, what we're paying for, and so on. On the second point, I feel like the wired side of everything sounds pretty solid, but the wireless falls apart from here because, you know, it's funny. I had a guest on the social hour the other day, and his Skype wasn't working very well, and we were like, can you like plug into Ethernet or something, you know, get wired? And he's like, I'm on a MacBook Air. Who does that anymore? I mean, everyone's wireless mm-hmm. all the time. And so I feel like if you're going to make laws that apply to being wired where wireless, there are loopholes that people can get through, that is irresponsible.
Although his Wi-Fi would technically fall under the wireline. Go ahead, Ina.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say to play devil's advocate on what the cellular side is saying, and I'm not at all saying that I agree. I'm just saying this is what they're saying is that they want to be able to offer services that are more limited. So, for example, one of the interesting business models I saw from one of the prepaid carriers is they have one tier of unlimited web access, but no access to streaming services like Pandora or Netflix, and you pay a lower rate. So they're saying, you know, if there weren't these net neutrality rules written the way they are for wireless, they couldn't even offer that service. Again, I'm not saying this is the way that they should go, but you know, there are some challenges when it comes to wireless that really don't exist on the wired side in terms of bandwidth.
On the transparency issue, I'm thrilled that would be there. I mean, it might be in small print, it might be in some kind of really hard to find piece of support information, but at least you'll know what's going on.
Right.
So, I mean, I know I would seek that out, and I probably would make recommendations to my friends and family what service to go with based on that kind of stuff. I'm pretty sure they're probably going to hide it as much as they can, though. Wired stuff, I mean, the wireless loophole bugs me a little bit. I mean, right now we have a lot of things that are in technology. LTE Advanced is coming in 2013. That's going to be super fast. And to deploy that technology out there to... You might start relying more and more on these 4G connections, or what was supposed to be 4G anyway. And if they are allowed to not operate the same way as a wired thing, and they're offering the amount of the same kind of speeds, you might find a really bizarre experience when you're going from like, okay, I'm walking around outside, I can access 30% of what I can access at home. I think it's gonna feel kind of strange.
I honestly, you know, my opinion is I don't want the government to have to be involved in any sense in the internet in any way. And the only solution for that is competition. And that is still, we need to do things. We're looking at the wrong thing. We're trying to paste a Band-Aid on here. These guidelines are virtually toothless. The only one that even has any bite is the no blocking for wireline. But while Sarah, your example may have, you know, been a MacBook Air with Wi-Fi, it's the right example, which is more people are using wireless all the time. His MacBook Air might be using a hot mobile hotspot.
I think it was, actually, there because you go. It was a really bad connection.
So then he's using a wireless connection that can fall under this stuff. I honestly think that these guidelines are useless. They're probably going to get sued out of existence because I don't think the FCC has proper basis here. It's really shaky basis for regulating. And I think we need to focus on creating more competition. We need to have Light Squared. We need to have Dish. We need to have Sprint. We need to have a strong T-Mobile that won't go bankrupt. We need to have lots of choices so that we as consumers can say, well, if you block things, I'm going to go to somebody else. We can't do that if there's nobody else, which is kind of the situation right now.
If the pipelines were neutral, that'd be nice to be able to switch left and right. You know, okay,
that's why I'm so excited about LightSquared. Yeah. Is they want to do that. They want to be the dumb pipe. Nobody else wants to be the dumb pipe but them, and then they'll wholesale it out, so we'll get lots of choices.
That'd be nice. You actually know what you're picking from, because they have to be transparent too.
And then we don't have to have some kind of weird guideline that can be interpreted all kinds of different ways and all kinds of loopholes found and actually have unintended consequences that are negative. Just hands off my internet, everyone, and lots of ways to get the internet. And that's the part we're missing, in my opinion. Apple has released a software update. Ina, you wrote this up on All Things D today. Tell us a little bit about what happened in iOS 5.0.1.
So this is running it right now, my iPhone 4, and I have a demo iPhone 4S that's also running the new software. You know, they said this should fix the battery issues. We'll see. There have been a number of users, not everyone, but a substantial number of users saying the battery life they've had since iOS 5 came out, whether it's on an older device that they upgraded or one of the new devices, has been way less than what Apple says to expect. And they are, been waiting. They've been trying some things. Anyway, Apple's out with 5.0.1, which is supposed to fix it, does a couple of other things. But we'll see. You know, people seem pleased with it right now. But, you know, until people have had a couple of days of battery life, I'm not sure how much of that to trust.
Yeah, Colin Weir, our streaming engineer here, has the update. And he has an iPhone 4S that was having battery problems. Again, it's too early to tell. He did say it was warmer.
We did get one email from a guy. Anecdotally, he said that his battery life is better. Just listen to a couple of podcasts and it stayed up to about 88%, whereas when he was doing it before, it'd be like down to 50.
Yeah.
So there's some information out there now.
There's mixed reports about it right now.
But there were people who swore that something was wrong with their iPads once they upgraded to iOS 5. I could not replicate that problem to save the life of me. So
I had an issue with iPod Touch, but not an iPad, strangely. But I know I think it was the notification system. That thing is constantly pinging. That's probably part of it.
Also, a couple of features have been uncovered in the developer versions of iOS. We thought maybe we'd see them in the patch, but I don't think we have yet. Developer Conrad Kramer discovered a panorama mode within the iOS 5 camera app. And then this morning, iOS hacker Sonny Dixon revealed an Android-like autocorrect bar above the on-screen keyboard. Essentially, instead of seeing autocorrect happen up in the place where you're typing, you would see a little bar with different suggestions for what you might want. A lot of Android keyboards do that, and it gives you a faster way of typing things. If you want to add them, you can add them both. You don't even have to jailbreak, I don't think. You use Backup Bot to make them happen, and you can get the instructions for the panorama mode at migrateiphone.com, and you can get the instructions for the keyboard autocorrect if you want to try adding that at sunnydixon.posterous iFixit.com. Finally, in iPhone news, iFixit determined that a sensor of unknown purpose is in fact an infrared sensor, and they believe it's used to activate Siri when the phone is held up to your ear.
And that would be the reason why it wouldn't be on any other device? I mean, I'm not going to hold an iPad to my ear.
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because you could still hold down the button even if you don't have the sensor. I'm really not getting any technical reason why it shouldn't work, other than you've got a faster chip in the new one and they're looking to sell, you know, it's one of only a few selling points for the 4S over the 4.
If that were the reason, I would think Apple would have used that as an excuse, and then everyone would be saying that's no excuse.
Right.
Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Ford, featuring voice-activated sync app link. Ford voice-activated sync, you know, is where you talk to your car. Kind of like Siri, actually. We talk about that, the similarities all the time. Leo's been talking to his car for years, and with purpose, not just talking to himself in the car, but like telling the car to do things like send text messages. Now with Sync App Link, you can do things like listen to your Twitter feed. You just say, hey, Ford voice activated Sync, Open Beak. That's the app. And then OpenBeak says, okay, what do you want to do? And you can have it read your timeline. You can have it read your at replies. You can use it to control Pandora, bookmark stations, create stations, do thumbs up and thumbs down. All of the stuff you're doing while keeping your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel. You're not leaning down. You're not looking away from the road. You're driving with your attention on the road, and you're just talking to your car. AppLink voice-activated sync has an API, too, by the way. So they're working with developers to bring all kinds of apps to the Ford. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Fiesta and learn more about it at ford.com/technology. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Moving on to a big bust of some malware makers. This is a piece of malware that was called, what was it called? A DNS changer, a Trojan horse that would change your DNS settings so that you were actually visiting malware servers, but you thought you were visiting normal sites. And they would do things. One of the examples was you go to the Wall Street Journal, you click on an ad, you think you're clicking on an ad that was legitimate from the Wall Street Journal, you'd actually end up being taken to an ad served by the malware instead of served by the Wall Street Journal. It was discovered not good at all. Discovered in 2007, the Mac version found in 2008 infected over 4 million computers. They stole $14 million this way, or defrauded people of $14 million. FBI Operation Ghost Click Tuesday arrested 6 Estonian nationals connected with the service. One additional Russian suspect is still at large. The defendants are being charged with 27 counts of wire fraud, conspiracy, money laundering, and computer-related crimes. And they have the FBI has taken the servers, and instead of taking them offline, they've changed them to redirect to legitimate DNS servers. So if you've still got the malware, it'll just redirect you to the right place instead of being hijacked.
So, okay, if I get this right, use the Wall Street Journal as an example. I go to visit wallstreetjournal.com. There's an ad for some kind of a car on the right-hand rail. I click through that ad, and then it takes me to a different ad altogether.
Yeah. And then there are some situations
but
where
But did I actually visit the correct originating Wall Street Journal site?
In the Wall Street Journal situation, what they did is hijack the ad server.
Yeah.
So that you're still looking at the Wall Street Journal, but you're getting the ads. In other situations, they would just take you to an entirely different website that looked like the original website. So you wouldn't know you weren't at, say, Amazon.com, but you'd actually be handing out information to the malware.
Wow. That's ridiculous.
Now, of course, you can remove this malware in all kinds of antivirus ways. But if you really want to check your system, check your IP address in Windows or Mac. Find out what your IP address is and then compare it to the addresses on the FBI list. They have a great website where you can do this. We created a shortcut to it because it's a really long URL. Go to bit.ly/FBIDNS. And you can actually just put in your IP address there, and it'll tell you like whether that IP address is a legitimate IP address that's being assigned by your router or whether it's one of these hijacked IP addresses. And that means you still have the malware and you need to have it removed.
But this happened over a couple of years. This operation has gone on for 2 years. I mean, do people have static IP addresses? What if you have a dynamic IP address? Isn't this?
Well, you don't have a dynamic IP address in this case. You have a malware assigned IP address.
That's what DNS changer does. That's what they're checking against.
Exactly. Okay. It's changed your IP address so you're no longer going to the IP address that your ISP wants you to go to. You're hitting another DNS. You have to check your DNS's IP address, not just your server IP address.
And how do you do that?
Go to bit.ly/FBIDNS.
Right. And that takes you to the FBI site to enter yours. But how do you get
the IP address? Well, it's different in the different ones. I would just do a Google search. How do I find my DNS IP address? But you're going to look in your settings or your control panel.
I believe CNET and their article actually has the full explanation for Windows and Mac.
Okay.
In the show notes.
Cool.
Good question. Everybody's talking about a New York Times article written by Claire Kane Miller about Larry Page and his change of style at Google. There are lots of great anecdotes in here. One of his first company-wide memos after he took the job was decreeing that hour-long meetings would now be 50 minutes to make sure everyone had a chance to go to the bathroom between meetings.
He's a humanitarian, this man.
He hates meetings. They actually apparently dismissed his secretary once because he didn't like the fact that she scheduled meetings. And so he figured he'd have fewer meetings.
Dismissed as in fired?
Well, I don't know if he had her reassigned or fired, but he basically said, I'm not going to have a secretary. I'm not going to have an administrative assistant. And that way I'll have fewer meetings because there won't be anyone to schedule them.
But he did wind up going back to an assistant.
Yes.
He needs to have these meetings. He's kind of the head of the company. You know, you think he should be going to these meetings a little. But there's some great quotes in there. I mean, this one, Larry is much more willing to make an okay decision and make it now rather than a perfect decision later, comparing him to Eric Schmidt. Because apparently Eric Schmidt was very, very proper, and he's from a business background, versus Page, who's an engineer. So he's going out there, he's flattening out things. And, I mean, I think it's in the Steve Jobs biography about them talking, Jobs and Page, and how Google's starting to look like Apple the way Page is taking over. It's very flat. Instead of it being like, oh, there's lots of different department heads, it's like, no, everyone talks to Page.
Ina, did you get a chance to read this article?
I did, and I think that some of this is about organizational structure, but a lot of this, or the real impetus here, is about combating sort of the adolescence, the bureaucracy that tech companies get as they sort of expand beyond whether it's the first decade or whatever that time is. Everyone loves to beat up on Microsoft now, but they're not the only company that is sort of grown up and trying to figure out where it goes from here. Certainly, I think, Facebook is the new Google. Google's the new Microsoft. You hear all these things. But I think Google really wants to stay cutting edge. They want to continue to be aggressive and expand. And they don't want to be become bureaucracy heavy. And some of it is just a matter of size. When you get a certain number of employees, it becomes harder to manage and harder to grow.
A company's experience like feature creep. It's like Office when you get like 1,000 different little add-ons you never know what to do with. I mean, I liked reading this piece because the other thing about it was seeing how he's trying to make Google much more nimble. It's, we've seen big companies out there that just can't make decisions fast enough. I mean, how many things have been killed since Page has been there? Like, Buzz is gone, or it's going to be gone. That notification keeps showing up in Gmail. It's going away. Buzz is going away. I mean, killing the unsuccessful projects and then focusing on being successful in other areas is, I mean, that's really important. Instead of just trying to make everything work, whatever you put money into, letting things go is actually a good idea.
Well, and even an example that's as silly as 1-hour meetings are now 50-minute meetings. That's somebody saying, let's be logical about this. People can't just finish a meeting at 11 and start another meeting at 11 because what ends up happening is someone runs to get coffee or they use the bathroom or they've got to make a quick phone call. And then the meeting starts late and we're disorganized. And that just spills over into the rest of, our business operations. So it sounds like he's cracking the whip, but it's a good thing for Google.
Do you think people actually follow that? Or do they say, Larry's not in this meeting, so we're going 60 minutes. Sorry. I mean, I've been in so many meetings that were supposed to end at 60 minutes that didn't end at 60 minutes. They kept going. I mean, it's just reality doesn't always follow the dictates of the Stalin-esque.
If boss man's not there, maybe people will bend the rules a little bit. But I think that these sorts of changes have to start at the top, and he's in charge, and that kind of mentality will trickle down to a team as long as they respect you.
I think the big question for Google is, does this more controlling leadership, does it impact how individual engineers there feel about it? One of the sort of pieces of the Google mythology that has been true is that idea that, you know, you have 20% time, and there's always these stories. Is it going away? Is it not? You know, but the idea that engineers should just pursue their interests and we'll figure out how to make a business of it later. I think they're trying to keep the best of that and put their weight behind fewer projects. That's a tough balance to strike. So we'll see how they do. You know, I've seen covering Microsoft really closely. They would have these really great ideas, but there was no way to go from that small to scale because they're just, you know, wasn't a way to get there. So I think the key for Google is to keep a way for these small projects to get big, even if they're making fewer of them big.
If you're working on a project that Larry Page is championing right now, you love everything he's doing. You think he's a genius. If you're on one of these
Google
projects,
Plus team,
yeah, absolutely,
they're pretty happy.
If you're on Google Buzz or one of these projects that's being eliminated, you might not be quite as happy with Larry Page.
Maybe you're getting reassigned to the Google Plus team.
Well, unless you got reassigned to Google Plus. Exactly.
Or your secretary.
We have a great story from Ars Technica, reported by Timothy B. Lee at Ars Technica, about Warner Brothers and their suit against Hot Files. They have a suit going on accusing Hot Files of violating the DMCA by knowing that copyright infringement was going on. They accuse Hot File of facilitating copyright infringement. In a Monday court filing, Warner Brothers admitted that it has issued takedown notices for files without looking at the files first. There's some crazy examples here. For one, they were issuing takedown notices based on file names. They had a movie called The Box, so they incorrectly asked for the removal of things like Cancer Out of the Box, an audiobook, and a BBC production of The Box That Saved Britain. Neither one of which are Warner Brothers properties. And apparently, one of the files they asked to be removed, this is the name of the file. When they sent the removal request, they said, please remove this file, okay? I'm not going to be speaking gobbledygook. This is the name of the file. http://hotfile.com/contacts.html and give them the details of where the link was posted and the link, and they will deal with the guy who posted the fake. Except guy is a naughty word, but...
Yeah, that's the string.
That's the string of the file name. So they were obviously not looking at these. Hot File says, hey, this is a violation of the DMCA. DMCA requires a copyright holder issuing a takedown notice to state that it has a good faith belief that the use of the material in the manner complained of is not authorized by the copyright owner. How can they have a good faith belief if they've never even looked at the file?
Well, I mean, the good faith argument, it could be that they were sold a piece of software that was automated, and so they're looking up, you know, the box, and they're trying to find these things. And their vendor was like, this thing will capture everything. It'll be great. You don't have to worry about it. So they could have a good faith belief that their software system...
So you blame
system,
the vendor.
That's what they would probably try to figure out to take the blame away, and they didn't violate the law by having good faith in that case. Also, you probably could argue the administrative insanity of trying to download every one of these files and then watch them to make sure that it is the box. I mean, I think arguably that could be one of their arguments. It's not a great one.
So yeah, I mean, but both of those are good counter arguments on the side of Warner Brothers. But it points out that the DMCA is broken.
Oh yeah.
If you can have a defense, a legal defense that, well, I can ask for content to be taken down that's not actually mine, then the DMCA doesn't work.
Right.
What's really important, though, in this case is the fact that they've admitted it. It's out there that this is the way this is actually working. This is what's actually happening. It's not really working in its intended use. This is the kind of thing that needs to be out there so this law can change or be interpreted differently.
Yeah, so what we need is SOPA, which says you don't even – it will make it the law that you don't have to know anything to get anything you want taken down because – the copyright industry needs the most protection because Viacom had its most profitable quarter recently.
Yep.
And the copyright industry seems to be outperforming all other industries in the recession. And even though we have malware out here, and maybe we should be going after the payment providers that give $14 million to a DNS changer piece of malware, instead, we'll focus all our efforts on the industry that's doing really well and has a few people trying to do fair use, and we'll crush them and support this industry instead of actually stopping criminals from stealing money off your computer with a piece of malware. That all makes perfect sense to me.
Exactly. That's been Tom's soapbox.
Soapa box.
Don't hold back, Tom. How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I get a little circumspect about these things.
I just wish I knew where you stood on this issue.
Well, something else that got hacked just now, Steam, apparently. We got sent this by someone in the chat room. I missed who actually sent it, but thank you for putting it through. A message just sent from Valve Corporation head Gabe Newell says credit card numbers and other personal information were inside a database compromised during a defacement attack on the Steam forums this Sunday. Valve is advising all of its Steam customers to keep a close eye on their credit card activity as those numbers were inside a database the hackers penetrated during the larger attack. They don't have evidence that encrypted credit card numbers or personally identifying information were taken by the intruders, but they're being extra safe, saying.
Forums are down. Steam itself is still up.
Yeah, well, I can't log into Steam right now, though. So we'll see. I mean, it's up, but I think a lot of people are trying to log in and change passwords and all that kind of thing. But good to know. Thanks for letting us know about that.
Well, if they have a problem, they know that the Sony model to just copy. Like, okay, we'll give you a free game.
Pull Steam down for 3 months and then give you a free game.
Free games, and here's some identity protection. And we'll have a video where we're saying we're sorry. They already know what to do.
Joshua Caleb was able to log in, so I just need to try a few more times. Let's move on to the news views. The government can get your Twitter records if they need them, but there are limits. A U.S. district court upheld a magistrate decision that allows the Department of Justice to access Twitter accounts of people associated with WikiLeaks. However, the DOJ will not have unfettered access to those accounts. It will be able to see what email address is linked to each account and when direct messages were sent. The Department of Justice will not be able to access the content of the messages.
The president and co-founder of Arm, Tudor Brown, will be leaving the company May 3rd, 2012. There's no person named as a successor yet, but perhaps to draw attention away from this presidential change, Arm also showed off a new GPU. It's called the Mali T658, and Arm says it's going to offer 10 times the graphics performance of the Mali 400. The company also said that the T658 will offer graphics equivalent to the Sony PlayStation 3. This GPU isn't expected to hit handsets until 2013.
Oh.
So it's kind of a lifetime away, but something to look forward to.
Adobe killed mobile Flash, but RIM doesn't care. The playbook will continue to support Flash, and RIM is going to release its own implementations, according to Dan Dodge, president of QNX. If you were wondering about future RIM phones running BBX, Alex Saunders, a RIM VP, told PC Mag that those phones will be like the playbook, running a resolution of 1024 by 600, so playbook apps will run smoothly on phones. And BBX phones will also support BlackBerry Enterprise Server.
Ina, what do you think of this approach by BlackBerry to say, you know, we're going to get rid of that bold interface and we're going to go all unified, playbook, BBX?
Well, I mean, on the one hand, you know, they want to give developers something consistent, and that is important. Developers want to write once and at least have it run on, you know, a couple different handsets. At the same time, what RIM is known for, what they've been good at, what still attracts those that still use them are the keyboards. I've never understood why RIM didn't have a device more like the Storm earlier that combined a touchscreen and the keyboard. And I think, you know, where they've kind of let themselves down is the fact that they haven't taken their strengths and added on top of them. You know, I think that's probably the way to go at this point, is towards touchscreens. But boy, you know, if there were an opportunity to do some innovation around keyboards, you would want to see it from a company like RIM.
Well, I hope they last long enough to put in place those things. They seem so shaky these days. But
and then the Flash thing, I think, is short-sighted. I mean, RIM saying, yes, we're going to continue to support Flash regardless of what Adobe does. And while they do have a source code license, I think the fact of the matter is if Adobe stops putting resources to making Flash work well in mobile, RIM's going to be hard-pressed to do it on its own. I mean, yeah. Flash wasn't working that well. It wasn't working very well at all on mobile devices, whether it was RIM's devices or Android devices. If it was going to be serious on mobile, it would have had to have gotten a lot better. I don't think it's very likely that RIM's going to be able to make Flash better on its own. It just seems unlikely.
Wall Street Journal reports that Zynga is currently telling employees to turn over stock or be fired. Give me your stock! The company apparently gave too much stock to its employees and, in light of an upcoming IPO, wants some of it back. According to the Journal, CEO Mark Pincus and other executives targeted specific people who they felt didn't deserve a windfall due to the amount of stock they already owned. Plenty of employees are upset, to say the least, and some employees have already hired attorneys.
I like the comparison that's been made about the Google Chef, where it's Zynga doesn't want another Google Chef episode like the chef who worked at Google who walked away with $20 million when Google went IPO.
Why? How did that hurt Google?
Well, it didn't. But Google, of course, was like, oh, man, good meals and stuff, but and didn't really write any code.
Daniel Kottke never got any stock from my Apple.
Exactly.
At least not
you know, I just have a real issue with this. I mean, to me, if you don't want to do that with employees, then don't give them stock in the first place. Pay them in cash. I mean,
take back.
You know, the idea that, you know, oh, it's suddenly worth too much. We thought it would be worthless when we paid you with it. Like,
I know.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Zynga
to me.
Calls backsies.
You know, the idea that the way that they'll get it back is by saying, well, you know, the reason this threat works is because they're talking about shares that haven't yet vested. So what they're saying to these employees is, look, if we fire you, your stock won't vest. So if you want to keep your job, give us back the stock that hasn't vested. So that's how they're doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, so it quote unquote works. But I don't think it's a good policy. And as people have pointed out, the other downside is no one's going to trust you again. So, exactly. I mean, chances are you're not going to, you know, that you're moving into a phase where you're going to have less equity-based compensation. But, man, I mean, you know, once a company does that, certainly the next person they're trying to hire with a stock package is not going to be very compelling.
People in the chat room are like, this can't be legal. I mean, that's why employees, some of them are current employees of Zynga. Some of them have already left the company, are pursuing their legal options. Digitimes is reporting that Amazon has ordered another 1 million units of the Kindle Fire from its suppliers. That brings Amazon's total to more than 5 million units that should be ready for this year. Definitely looks like the Kindle Fire could be the first real competitor, at least in terms of sales, to the Apple iPad.
No, the Motorola Zoom was so popular. That must be the real competitor.
Sales, not shipped.
Deutsche Telekom reported its Q3 numbers, and its U.S. subsidiary, T-Mobile, actually saw growth in its customer base by adding 312,000 prepaid customers. This is the first time in a year that T-Mobile has seen growth. To make sure that the whole AT&T deal still goes through, though, T-Mobile made sure to point out that it is expecting a really rough upcoming quarter because it's still without the iPhone 4S.
Hey, guys, we had a really good quarter, but we still need to be bought. It's going to suck next quarter.
Yeah, but they actually, you know, if you dig into the numbers, they improved on a couple metrics that actually matter, like, you know, their business, the margins were better and so forth. But once again, their growth is coming through prepaid customers, which in the cellular industry just aren't the same as sort of those contract premier customers. The reason contract customers are more valuable is the churn is lower, but they're also the customers that tend to spend more per month.
Yeah, Sprint's facing the same problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is some legitimacy to what T-Mobile is saying. And, you know, the insult to injury that I've seen over the last couple months or weeks is the fact that you have Cellular South or now CSpire saying they're getting the iPhone, which what a slap in the face for T-Mobile. Part of the problem is T-Mobile uses a different frequency. And so CSpire can use the same iPhone that's going to other people, whereas they would have had to build in other band support just for T-Mobile, which apparently they didn't want to do.
No, Apple didn't want to go to that expense, not for T-Mobile. Yesterday, we reported that a moderator of Mexican social network Nuevo Laredo Live was murdered for tipping off authorities about the local drug cartel. Today, Nuevo Laredo Live posted on Twitter that those reports are incorrect and that the murdered man had no affiliation with their site. The site believes the misinformation was spread by the cartel to keep people quiet on its social network.
The Verge is reporting that the Nokia Lumia 800 will come to the U.S. on AT&T along with LTE. Currently, Windows Phone Mango doesn't support LTE, though, so the Lumia might ship with Tango. At least that's what The Verge is saying. No word on whether the phone will be subsidized or an actual launch date, but Nokia has confirmed the U.S. launch of its Windows phones in early 2012.
Tech site Chip Hell found some slides that provide details about Intel's upcoming Haswell processors. Intel wants Haswell chips in Ultrabooks, so it's supposed to be more power efficient at 15 watts TDP. It will also be a single chip, unlike Sandy Bridge, which required two parts, a CPU and a platform controller hub. The processor will be limited to two cores for Ultrabooks, but notebook variants will support 2 to 4 cores.
On to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Now, I tried to resist falling for TomTom's marketing the first time when they put out the Darth Vader video of Darth Vader recording the directions, and I failed. And it's happening again because they've just put out a voice for Sesame Street characters Bert and Ernie that you can upload to your TomTom. And they have a hilarious video.
Right. Stay in the left lane. Oh. Now the right lane. Now the left lane. Next right, Bert. Cross the roundabout.
Ernie, slow down.
Take the ninth left.
The ninth left.
Go straight for 600 centimeters.
Ernie,
you turn ahead.
Ernie.
Turn around when possible. Toll road ahead. Toll road.
Thank you.
You have reached your destination.
That's an outtake from the recording sessions of Bert and Ernie.
I love that they even go through the trouble
Must
of all this.
Have.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll cost you $13 for the voice pack if you want to add that to your TomTom. But
sounds like a real wild ride.
Definitely watch the full video because there's a lot of laughs in there.
Before we get to the calendar, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Slingbox. Slingbox introduces their iPad app, so now you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you take it. Perfect for the holidays. You're going to be traveling a lot upcoming, and you're going to want to watch your home TV. Get away from the relatives, you know? Watch some shows off your DVR. Watch some sports that maybe there's sports that they don't get where you're going. You can do all of that with your Slingbox. You plug it into the internet. You plug it into your home television, and everything you get on your home television, you get anywhere in the world you have an internet connection. You can find Slingbox or see a demo at Best Buy or check it out at slingbox.com. Slingbox and your home TV now appearing on iPads everywhere. On to the calendar.
This is a big week for releases. Love Film came to Android handsets today, November 10th, for all you UK types anyway. Tomorrow, November 11th, the Apple iPhone 4S is launching in 15 additional countries. Minecraft also comes out of beta tomorrow, November 11th. You might have also heard of this little thing called the Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim. Comes out tomorrow,
Available
November 11th.
On your non-hacked Steam account.
Oh, yeah. That timing. Now people are really excited about Skyrim. And finally, KDD Cup, that's a data mining competition, is looking for a good candidate data mining problem for this year's competition. So if you have a data set that could be mined to do some good in an area like medicine or education, the environment, just to name a few examples, submit your idea, not the data, just the idea, at KDD.org by November 15th. I have faith. You can do it.
Some people in the chat room are saying that the Minecraft beta doesn't end until the 18th. So we'll double check that because the articles I saw said the 11th. Time to check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a voicemail from Alexander, good old Alexander, discussing the marketing for yesterday's randomizer topic, urine created power. Go, Alexander.
Hi, this is Alex. I have a name. For this, we power everything with our pee thingy. How about urine charge? Get it?
Because it's a pun and a pun.
Yes.
Because it charges
Alex, FTW.
Your electrical.
That was pretty good. You got
That's
it.
That's good.
Thank you.
That's good on many levels.
Alex.
Wonderful.
For that. Email from Jesse in Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, TNT crew. Longtime listener, first time writer. I think that you were a bit too dismissive of Republic Wireless, or at least their concept. We should be championing new market strategies that foster competition. I think that their idea is great. I'm the type of person who doesn't talk or text much, and I'm usually on Wi-Fi. However, I pay AT&T over $50 a month for their basic plan that has essentially the same talk, text, and data limits that Republic Wireless is offering. So they would save me $30 per month, and I would get the unlimited minutes, if I needed them, when I'm on Wi-Fi. That said, I'm sure that they could improve on their concept to meet the needs of people who want more cellular data. Perhaps they will come up with a reasonable tiered pricing structure that fits into whatever they are paying Sprint on the back end. I wish Republic Wireless success in shaking up the wireless market. Thanks, Jesse. I absolutely agree with you, except on one point. Don't call it unlimited if it's limited.
Yeah.
That was my only criticism. I think he's absolutely right. It's a great plan. I like to see other wireless competitors come into the market, but you can't really call it unlimited. Can you, Enos?
Is this on the Republic thing?
Yeah, the $19 unlimited.
Yeah, because I talked with the executives there, and I think it's really an interesting service, but I noticed that their use of the term unlimited has really rankled a lot of people.
Well, it could be as useless as 4G as a word. Why not? Let's just make unlimited mean anything we want.
Well, that's like infinity, but it ends next year. I mean, unlimited means unlimited, right?
Except at T-Mobile, where unlimited means once you hit a tier, they're going to, throttle you. So, I mean, you know, the cellular industry does damage the English language more than any other I've seen.
Absolutely. Well said.
Next email from John R. Perfect. Hello, TNT peoples. Maybe Apple dislikes Charlie Miller because every year at CanSec West, pwned to own, he cracks Safari on OS X in a matter of seconds. He was also quoted as comparing hacking Safari on OS X to opening a can of dog food. Just a thought.
Cat food. I can't believe you misread that.
That's weird. It was like a weird thing where I saw cat and
what
I said
there?
Dog. Whoa. Well, because I know that opening cat food is really hard. I don't know why I said that. It was like a weird reaction.
That's pretty funny, though. Yeah. They probably aren't in love with Charlie Miller at Apple. It's fair to say.
Yes.
Last email from Christian. I think there's this perception out there that Adobe dislikes HTML and that yesterday was somehow a bitter concession. As someone inside the company, I can tell you that there are a lot of us who are very excited about what we can do with HTML5. Personally, I've been researching and working on HTML projects for quite some time at Adobe, and I've been working with a lot of very smart people who are as passionate about it as I am. There are definitely people out there, both inside Adobe and outside, who are passionate just about Flash, but I think it's more accurate to say that the overwhelming majority of us are simply passionate about the web and about building awesome experiences. Flash has always been about providing functionality that HTML couldn't. However, now that HTML5 can provide a lot of that functionality, we're going to have a lot of fun seeing what it can do.
Thanks, Christian. No, that's good perspective. And I try not to fall into the mistake of treating companies like people, because they are large collections of people and they don't have the same motivations. But, you know, for joke's sakes, sometimes it's too tempting to treat it that way. But no, it's good to get that kind of double check. Thanks, Christian. And I agree. It seems like Adobe is very serious about HTML5 and doing great things with it. And I hope they do.
Minecraft is the 18th. It's actually on Notch's Twitter account.
All right. Submit your stories that you like, and we will look at them for coverage on Tech News Today. It helps us figure out what we cover every day. Go to technewstoday.reddit.com. Sign up for the Reddit. You don't have to submit stories. You can just vote on things. In fact, that's probably more important. The people say, that's the story I want to hear about. That's the story I want to hear about, as well as submitting new stuff as it breaks. And also, submit your favorite moments of Tech News Today, or any show on Twit, at twit.tv/bestof. If you've got that one moment, you're like, that was hilarious. That was a great piece of information. That was my favorite thing that happened on Tech News Today this year. Go to twit.tv/bestof. Let us know what moment that was, and we will consider it for inclusion in our Best Of show at the end of the year. Ina Fried, thanks so much. It's always good to have you on the show. Let folks know about your reporting over there at All Things D and where they can find it.
You've got the Mobilized up, which will take you to my stuff, but we're all just one big happy All Things D family. So if you go to allthingsd.com, you can see Kara, Walt, and the rest of us, all of our stuff, more every day.
And you're mostly covering the mobile space these days, but I notice you get assignments outside of that area sometimes.
I swerve out every now and then. I love photography, so if there's a good photography story, the Lytro, that light field camera, I spend some time with them. Different stuff, but mainly mobile.
Well, it's great stuff, Ina. I'm a big admirer of your work. And everybody, if you want to get good reporting on those kind of topics, check it out, allthingsd.com. Thanks to everybody for watching. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Iaz is off on a plane tomorrow, so we have two guests. Darren Kitchen will be joining us, as well as Nicole Carrico. We'll see you then.